They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today is a guy who's one in a million, really. His name is Jonathan DeSalles, and he's got a law firm in Phoenix, Arizona called the DeSalles Law Group. His client who put me on to him describes him as smart, brilliant, entertaining, and unfortunately, you all missed our conversation off the air. He is all of that and a whole lot more. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. You are about the only attorney in Phoenix or the entire state of Arizona who represents only homeowners against their HOAs. Is that correct?
I am the only one that I know of who does so consistently. I know there are one or two others who maybe ride both sides of the fence. I don't find that to be a productive issue. So I only represent homeowners, yes.
And you've had some interesting cases, and we're going to talk about some of them. But before we do, I want to talk about the blog you have on your website. So would you like to give us your web address and also talk a little bit about the blog, because I found it very, very interesting.
Well, sure. We have a blog on our website, www.desalles.com. We try to update through social media issues, events, legal issues that seem to be coming up again and again, and our take on them, whether other people agree or disagree with it.
And you've given, I was looking at your blog, you were giving cases or instances of what happens and what to look for and how to protect yourself against it, right?
That is correct. I think I'm a little overdue in updating it, but this is certainly the prompt I needed to get back in there and get some fresh content out.
Because quite often... Yeah, I'm sorry. Go on.
No, the good news is that these issues have never been fully resolved. So even the old content still has vitality today.
Well, so many of the people that I hear from say they're doing this to me. Can they do that? And as you said off the air, unfortunately, usually they can. But how do you protect yourself against it? And I think that's where you give people tips and hints on what to look for.
That is correct. Unfortunately, when you move into a house that has a homeowners association or condominium association, you are by definition ceding certain rights that you have otherwise might have. For example, I want to go outside and paint my house pink or purple. I might not be able to do that if I live in a homeowners association.
It's so sad because those purple houses that I see around are just fun.
I had one down the street from me for about 10 years, and I considered it rather ugly just because of how they did it. I've seen great ones, but at the end of the day, I walk in my house, and I never think about it again.
It's not. There was one in Arlington, and unfortunately, they went through and just destroyed everything
that was old. And although it wasn't pretty, I wouldn't want to live in it. But there was something about it that was so cheerful amid this sea of gray and brown. this little house stood out. This little building stood out. It was wonderful. So you had, I talked to one of your clients, and this was a long and protracted court case, and you had a lot of interesting stuff. You want to tell us a little bit about that case?
Sure. This is a case where it's in an upscale community in Phoenix. I mean, the association dues were astronomical, in my opinion, and there were only the only common areas to speak of was a pool. It was a condominium. It was a pool, a clubhouse, and a hot tub, and that was pretty much it. Oh, sorry, there was also a workout room. And the board of directors decided they didn't like the message that this owner was saying when she was talking to other people and to them. So they decided they were just going to suspend her rights to use the common areas. Initially, they said they were going to do it indefinitely. But instead, instead of making it indefinite, they ultimately changed the suspension so that it was 10 days for every day that she didn't do something that they wanted her to do and that she didn't have an obligation to do. So by the time the case came around to trial, it was not an indefinite suspension, but their lawyer stood up and said, Your Honor, it's a suspension for, as of today, 6 years and 6 months. So can you imagine not using your pool for 6 years? Because of what you were saying and who you were saying it about.
And whatever happened to the First Amendment?
Well, you know, First Amendment doesn't really have any application in a private contractual setting, although the concept does, is you should be able to, if you live in a homeowners association, you should be able to ask questions, you should be able to look at documents, you should be able to do anything and everything you want to do to make sure you understand both the law and the association, how it operates, and you should be able to ask questions. Hey, why are we spending all this money on this? We don't need that. Hey, why does our bank account not balance? Or whatever the questions are, and if you believe that you at least should be allowed to call out your elected officials, whether they are, you know, government or whether they are association, without fear of reprisal.
It's sort of ridiculous that they're punishing her 10 days for every day that she refuses to do something.
Yeah.
I mean, what are these people thinking? What on earth are these people thinking? But the
you know what?
Yeah.
I don't remember who said it. Some dead white guy at this point, but I you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Is that William Shakespeare?
No, that was Lord Acton.
That's right, Lord. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Power corrupts.
Lord Acton, that's right.
Power corrupts. Absolutely.
And it's true.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's, especially in the HOA sense, my experience is that, for the most part, the people who get on the board are people who have an agenda. And that might be a good agenda. There's several board members I find who have a very positive agenda. They want to see things develop for the community. But there's also people whose motives are all back here or who are in a position where they're going to be criticized.
Well, I put myself in that position. That's how I got involved and got started in all of this back almost 30 years ago. You know, the attacks were fast and furious. And the lies were incredible, but I think what I did was I just did not respond to all of that. And when homeowners came to the meetings and they wanted to see anything, I gave them my board packet. I said, look, this affects you. You have a right to know what we're doing. You can look at this.
In Arizona, that we have a statute in Arizona that gives you that right to do that.
Well, we have one now in Virginia, but I did that before that statute was there, before there were any laws allegedly regulating associations. Basically, they're giving the associations all kinds of powers. But the thing is, it makes absolutely no sense to withhold information from the people who are going to be footing the bill for all the stupid things the board does. And so,
you know, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think there needs to be, you need to know. I mean, if you live in a household with someone and that person is taking the checkbook and going and spending it on frivolous things every day, you have a right to know that.
You do. You absolutely do. So I gave them my book. I said, "Here, come and pick it up. You look at it." So they got to the point where they did trust me, and I wrote a monthly article for the newsletter, and I talked about the issues we were dealing with and what one side thinks and what the other side thinks, and then I told them what I thought and how I voted. Or if there was something that was upcoming, I said, "All right, I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. So let me know." And it quietened things down a lot because they were not, I mean, there was transparency. There was openness. I gave them everything that I had. There was nothing hidden. And I think they realized then, the board, I mean, I was one of 9 board members, so, you know, just giving my book. And the other board members looked at me like, "Are you crazy?" They're going to pay for it. They need to know.
And that works great, by the way. If you have other board members who are willing,
you're disappearing, Jonathan. Hello.
Willing to and they, are you there?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's great when you have other board members who don't try to interfere with.
Well, they didn't have a choice. Because the book was on the other side of the table. And
exactly.
And so they didn't have a choice. At first they looked at me, and then they wondered what I would get up to next. But the thing was, I couldn't see withholding that information. I really couldn't see withholding that information. And I think legal opinions, I couldn't see withholding that information either. I know the attorney said, "Well, that's client attorney privilege. Well, the privilege is on the client side. So if the attorney says,
well, and also who is the client for the attorney? It should be the association.
Right. Absolutely. So instead of just hiding everything behind, "Well, our attorney told us," I would just hand it over. Of course, that doesn't get done anymore because I'm not on the board. I would have turned that over, but. And I did. But I'm glad we're on the same page. You were telling me about another case that you have that you're dealing with that you call the Ragu spaghetti sauce case.
This is an interesting scenario where the homeowner rents her unit out, and the renter was accused of throwing or putting spaghetti sauce on someone's car or at someone. The facts of it, the allegations that were kind of lost on me, and I'd heard multiple different stories and reading various reports as to what exactly happened. But the board member got it in their mind that, well, this was an illegal act because this was an act of whether it's criminal damage or assault. It was some kind of an act that they wanted to stop. So their way of doing, and by the way, it was a single isolated event. It wasn't like a big pasta feast. It was a, you know, it was a one-time, the alleged act was a one-time incident. But what the association is doing, and this is ongoing, is they are demanding that the homeowner evict her tenant because he allegedly committed a crime. He hasn't been charged, hasn't been arrested, hasn't been cited, but they say he committed this crime. And in Arizona, there's a statute that says that if a property is used in the commission of a crime, we have the right to make you kick the person out. Now, first of all, on its face, let's just acknowledge that, that those facts are insane. And this is just silly, right?
Yeah, you're not going to get any arguments from me on that.
Yeah, so, but the reality is, I mean, the statute, the purpose of the statute, the reason the statute exists is so that if you have a meth house or a drug dealer dealing drugs or meth or prostitution or some other illegal substance out of a house, the it gives the landlord and the association the power to get this individual out, and in fact, it imposes an obligation on them. You know, and so that statute, great, wonderful. But the statute does not contemplate that if I get a DUI, if I get pulled over for drinking while driving on the way home from work tomorrow, the statute does not contemplate that, oh, that's a crime, so now you got to kick him out of that apartment or that condominium. And that's what essentially what they're trying to do is they're trying to say because he committed an assault, allegedly, or criminal damage, and because he happens to live there, we are invoking our right under the statute to kick him out.
I've seen that, and I'm not sure it's just in Arizona. I have a feeling that this is something that's creeping across the states. And, of course, we all know who the common denominator is in all of these idiotic laws. But I know that the tenants, the landlords and tenants organizations are trying to fight this. Because it takes away your rights. I mean, if you have a tenant in your house and some ninny next door decides they don't want you living there because they don't like you, they're going to come up with some idiotic, you know, they saw you spit on the sidewalk in the next town over, and therefore that's a crime,
yep.
And we're going to evict you, and you're going to be out of here, and then maybe we'll I'll put my cousin next door, which is what I really wanted anyway. In the first place.
And you're, I mean, you're absolutely correct. That's one of these, it's so ripe for abuse that it just, it can't be enforced. Otherwise, you know, again, someone's going to say, hey, I saw him exposing himself three towns over, or I saw him drinking and driving, or he played his music too loud. I mean, any number of facts fit this story.
How can you just accept something like that without any proof? Isn't there something about being innocent until proven guilty? Or does that not apply
yes.
in HOAs? Yes, I'm glad you said that.
Well, no,
I think that, yes.
I mean, but in this, with this statute in particular, the statute talks about the commission of a crime, not allegation of a crime. And even then, it talks about crime being operated out of a property. And I think everyone who would read that language would agree that the purpose of the statute is not to, you know, to impose, to let someone evict you because you were littering. But that's how it could be misconstrued.
You know, there's so many fabrications and so many stories that over the years I've heard, because although the show is 17 years old, I've been following this for a whole lot longer, and there have been stories of actual videos of board presidents who decided they wanted to go after you. They decided they don't like you, and they're going to fine you for all kinds of things. One of them was, you know, having dog poop in the front yard and just not keeping your house up. So the homeowners installed, after being harassed and abused by this guy, they installed these cameras. And the cameras showed him walking his dog to their yard. They didn't have dogs. To their yard to do his business. The board president. He then had a bottle of beer in his hand, and their truck was parked on the street, and the window was down. So he threw litter and a full bottle of beer that without the lid on into the truck, so that it smelled of beer. There was beer all over the place. There was litter in the car and all of that. All of that was captured on video. So when he started sending them these letters,
that their yard was full of dog poop, their, you know, and just all of these violations and fines, demands for fines and all of that. They took this video and they played it in court, or they played it for a local newspaper. I can't remember what the deal was, but that video went viral. And this guy had to leave. But quite often, a lot of these things are fabricated, by the people who have an interest in it. They want you out. They're going to find, if you haven't actually done anything, they're going to find something.
That's the nature. The nature of fines are that there's always a considerable amount of discretion with the person who gets to impose them.
Well, in the law, you have in the law, as you know, you have the separation of powers. In an HOA, you have the board president making the rules, finding you in contempt of the rules, and fining you to the point where they can take away your house to collect that fine in many states, non-judicially in Virginia. And that's pretty terrifying.
Look, I think living in an association just by definition can be terrifying, and I can't imagine living that way in a situation where you have someone who has such a vendetta out to get you. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier: people with thin skin should not be in positions of power, either at the government level or at an association level.
So how do you prevent it?
if I could answer that, we'd have a different president right now. I don't know. I mean, I think one way to do it would be to impose some sort of a term limit on board members, because oftentimes what happens is you get the same board members for years. You know, I've been president for 5 years or 7 years or 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that the flip side is hard too, because there's people who don't want to serve. And frankly, it's probably the people who don't want to serve who should probably be the people in power.
I've said that so many times. But here's the other thing. I think we're dealing with two issues. You've got, especially in a condominium where you've got the maintenance of the structure, and everybody has to pay to maintain that, to paint it, to do all the routine maintenance, roofs repairs, if you have elevators, elevator maintenance, and all of that. But why does that translate into people management? How do we end up with all of these rules telling you what you can wear in the hallways, which door you can use, when you can, who can get in the elevator with you? I mean, why are we managing people?
I guess the larger question is, why are we managing people through the use of deed restrictions? I mean, deed restrictions are regulations on your property. It's not how you, you know, it's not in an individual courtesy restriction.
See, this is where it's become so commonplace that everybody accepts it. We've had condominiums, we've had common ownership for centuries in other countries. You go to Europe, France, England. They've got all of these old buildings where you actually buy an apartment in the building. But it's the owners who meet and the owners who make the decisions, and the manager is told what to do. So you don't have the manager making all the decisions, finding people, deciding that they don't like your flip-flops and deciding they're going to fine you for that, and then deciding they're going to foreclose to collect that fine. I mean, that whole concept is something I just have never been able to wrap my head around.
Well, now, in theory, at least in Arizona, you can't foreclose over a fine. You can only foreclose over assessments. Now, that's been tested every once in a while with some creative lawyering on the other side that says that a fine can be an assessment under the declaration, and therefore we're allowed to foreclose. But for the most part, you can't. The good news in Arizona, this is, you can't foreclose over a fine.
What about the hierarchy of payments?
Well, and there's generally any payment that's received first gets applied to assessments, then late fees, and then attorney fees, and then I guess if there's something left over, it would go toward fines, I suppose. Although I have a problem with that, because a fine, until you get sued in court for a fine, it shouldn't be a binding charge against you. You know, the problem where that you encounter with payments is, you know, what happens if you pay more than what's owed and you say assessments and they say, well, you don't owe any assessments, so we're going to go ahead and apply that to the fines. But yeah, I mean, I'll tell you that is a recurring problem in Arizona, where their money is received and it's misapplied, because that's not how they want to apply it.
And is this codified that the money first goes to paying the assessments?
Yes.
Okay, so that's in
first. It's a statute in Arizona. You know, and the way they get around that sometimes is they get the lawyers to send a payment agreement, and in the payment agreement it says, you agree we can apply this any way we see fit.
Nice try.
So you just contracted yourself out that statutory scheme.
How can you contract yourself out of that?
Well, I mean, there are a number of ways you can enter into a contract that, unless the statute says otherwise, you're able to do that. I know my own personal opinion is that you can't on that particular issue. However, we see it all the time that it's attempted to be made, and then, you know, the lawyer or the property manager or the community manager or even sometimes a board member says, you know, I'm going to apply that payment to those fines, or I'm going to apply that payment to attorney's fees first, and it just creates a very bad way of doing business.
I've seen attorneys who've come and sat down at the board meetings and said, you know, here's a payment schedule, and of course the first thing is you pay the legal fees, and then by the time you get through paying everything else, there's not enough left over to pay the assessments. Oh, by the way, we now can tack on more late fees and interest, and, you know, we'll generate another letter, and we'll just start all over again. And it's never ending. It's just this downward spiral that just keeps going and going.
Yeah,
and going.
You know what? It's what I refer to as the lactating bovine. if you know anything about cows, once they start lactating, they never stop. So, and in many respects, that the process you just described is very similar to a lactating bovine, where the attorneys or the community managers are able to take a very small amount of assessments and turn that into thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and people get caught up in this. It's like a cycle of domestic violence. You know, it's a cycle of homeowner association. I wouldn't say violence, but, you know, homeowner association harassment, where you constantly, you're making your payment, but for whatever reason they may have missed a payment, or you know, or payment came too late, so they suddenly start doing all this weird stuff, and suddenly one missed payment turns into $3,000.
And that happens all the time, and that's ridiculous, and it shouldn't happen.
Oh, I agree with you, and it happens here quite frequently. You know, the lawyers are good. The lawyers know what they're doing, and the lawyers know how to, you know, look out for their client's best interest. Right or wrong. I mean, you know, I mean, people have different opinions. I know, you know, lawyers are not usually the, you know, a topic of fun conversation for everyone. But, you know, the problem is not, in my opinion, with the lawyers. It's with a system that lets this happen.
The lawyers all went to the same law school. It's called the CAI School of Law. And if you've ever attended any of their law seminars, I attended one of them a few years ago. It's horrifying what they do there. I mean, it's just absolutely terrible. To them, the association is the most important thing, not the people. To them, they have no problems going after a single mother with a deathly ill kid and insisting that she's being selfish because she's not paying her assessments instead of buying medicine for her child. They like to call it a community when in fact it's not, because communities don't work that way.
It shouldn't work that way, and there should be. And I've had situations where, you know, the young mother in your scenario reaches out to the association and says, hey, I need a little help this month, so it's going to be late. Is that okay? And the association says, that's not a problem. And then there's the flip side of it is the association that ignores the hey, it's going to be a couple months, but here's how I'm going to pay this. And instead, they immediately start tacking on late fees and other charges.
There ought to be, I would think there ought to be something in the budget to allow for something like that to happen.
Then you start talking about people. Then that starts affecting people's pocketbook. And a lot of people, most of the people I represent, live paycheck to paycheck. They couldn't afford to pay even another $50 for that rainy day slush fund for their neighbor. I mean, it's you know, I guess what we're talking about here is a glorified socialism, perhaps.
Not necessarily. But when you have a budget and you've got a pool of money, you decide how you're going to use that money. You don't have to use every single penny that's coming in. Part of that could be there to cover a rainy day. And a rainy day could include a child who desperately needs medicine. And then allow the mother to come back at a later date and repay that. I'm not talking about socialism. I'm not talking about covering the costs. I'm just saying you can plan not to use every penny that comes in. And you can plan to have enough money put aside for a rainy day, for something that's not foreseen. Because that happens. That's part of life.
Yeah, but what you just described there, a lot of people would have a problem with.
Oh, I know. I know they'd have a problem with it. I know they'd have a problem with it. But I'm not suggesting it's going to cost anyone any more. I mean, you've got the income. You just don't have to spend it all. You don't have to plan to spend it all. Because when you do that and something happens, and I'm not talking about the single mother with a deathly ill kid, but when something happens, then you're going to go after people for special assessments. And these are the same people you're talking about who are living paycheck to paycheck, and they cannot come up with $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 at the drop of a hat to pay for the mismanagement by the HOA. And they're stuck with it.
Yep.
And I know, I mean, I've done enough budgets for HOAs. I know how it is. It's like, oh, well, we've got all this extra money here and we can do this. Yeah, we can. But maybe what we ought to do is not throw it all away, and maybe we ought to hang on to it because we might need it. And then have the mother come back when the child is feeling better, come back and repay what she owes. There's no question. I always tell people you have to pay. You cannot get away from paying.
Well, but then what do you do in a situation with that scenario where someone, let's say a board member, doesn't believe her or doesn't think the child is sick enough or doesn't, I mean, when it's great if everyone shares that value, but if there's different values there, how do you decide who gets to make that decision? Because where I see that going is I see that being the opposite of the finding scenario, where you have someone who exercises the same amount of discretion, and whoever wields the power or wields the decision-making process gets to be the one to decide.
You were talking about associations where a homeowner goes in and says, look, is it okay if I'm a month or two late because this is what's going on? I could never take money away from a kid, a dying kid. I couldn't do it. Will someone believe her or not believe her? Probably. I don't know. I mean, we did face that. We did face that when I was on the board a long time ago. And the woman came back and she did pay back assessments. But, you know, we covered it until she was ready to do that. It's not, we didn't.
Well, let me throw a wrench in the works there, because a lot of the associations, a lot of the management companies have deals worked out with some of the law firms, where the law firms, much like a lot of collection mills, they say, well, any account that's more than 30 days past due, you give to us. They want to maximize they want to minimize their risk and maximize the reward. So the one way to do that is to, like a lot of collection firms do this. You know, there are certain if they file meets a certain criteria, let's say past due by 31 days, it is automatically referred to the lawyer. I mean so that's actually delegating that power altogether to the law firm.
If you go and you look at the original intent for HOAs, or the way it was sold initially, it was sold that it gives the homeowner access, or gives them more control over how they live, where they live, and all of that. What's happened over the years is the homeowner has lost all control. It has been taken over
yep.
by the special interests, management companies. You no longer have a manager. You no longer have an executive director who just makes sure that the lawn people do the lawn and, that you keep the books in order, that you prepare the board packages and, do the kind of work that you were supposed to do. Now, they're telling, it's a case of the dog, the tail wagging the dog. And then you've got the law firms that have gotten themselves involved and, no, you must do this and you must do that. And by the way, you may not show anybody my opinions because that's client attorney privilege, and therefore no one can see what we're doing and what we're up to. And the homeowner has lost more and more and more control to the point where they're little more than slaves, because they have no control over it. I mean, they have to live there. They have to pay this. They have to bow when they're told to bow. They have to turn the lights out at whatever time. They have to get permission to have a front hose in their yard. I mean, it's just got to the point where people have no control at all. None whatsoever.
You're right. It's a scary proposition.
And I would like to see it go back to, wait a minute, you're the manager, we hired you, we pay you, we tell you what to do, not you tell us what to do. Attorneys, if we have a legal problem, we'll call you. Until then, have a good day. Go away. You're not on retainer with anybody, are you, John? When you have a client, they call you and then you go on there, but you're not there telling them what to do, treating them like infants. It's become so complicated and so unpleasant.
You're right, Shu. I agree that there's certainly a lot of room for improvement on that issue. Absolutely.
What are so okay? So you've got all of these issues, and you're
obviously these are the same issues we're dealing with. What do you find is one of the biggest problems in Arizona? By the way, I used to live in Arizona. I lived in Mesa, but I don't remember any HOAs back then.
Oh, God, there's HOAs everywhere in Mesa. It's one of the biggest
now.
It's one of the biggest planned communities. Used to be that Arizona had a statute that essentially encouraged developers to use planned communities. But the the big issues I see are frankly, I mean, lien foreclosures, in my opinion, are big. The statute in Arizona is a little vague in that what do you do if you fall behind, but then you make a payment, but a lawsuit's already been filed, and a lot of the law firms continue to try to foreclose and take homes. And that's kind of a scary thing. You make this payment, you make this payment, but they continue to try to foreclose over attorney's fees and costs. And that's when we go back to that lactating bovine that I mentioned.
It's never ending. I like that term. If you remember Winona Blevins in Texas, the 80-some-year-old woman who their assessments were annual assessments, and her best friend died, and she ended up in the hospital for 3 months, and she missed paying an assessment. And so the following year, when she got her bill from the HOA, there were two annual assessments on there. And she said, oh, I forgot to pay it. So she wrote a check for every penny they asked for and went and deposited the check in the box that they were supposed to deposit it in. And then one morning at 8:00, there was a knock at her door, and there was a sheriff out there with an eviction notice in her hand. They had sold her house on the courthouse steps. She did not know about it, because they had sent letters to her husband, who had never lived in the association. And she thought it was junk.
Wow.
It was Mr. Blevins. Well, Mr. Blevins had never lived there, because she bought the house after he died. And it was paid for. She didn't owe a penny on it. And it was sold on the courthouse steps. And she was evicted. What they discovered was that the treasurer got her check, refused to cash it, because he had already started foreclosure proceedings and he didn't want to stop it at that point. So they went ahead with the foreclosure. And her attorney discovered that they had increased the assessments considerably over the years, and were collecting more than they were allowed to collect per the governing documents. So she was going to sue the association, until she realized that it was the homeowners that would have to pay. So she didn't. But the fact was that the association had been collecting a lot more, because apparently it said in the governing documents that the assessments will be so much for so many years, and this may not be amended. And, of course, they just ignored that, blew it off, and increased the assessments. So, I mean, there's...
Yeah, that's, I think that vaguely resembles a plot of a movie I remember from a few years ago. Unfortunately, that was fiction, and what you're describing is fact.
Oh, it was very real, because I interviewed her, and I interviewed her attorney, who was marvelous. She was absolutely marvelous.
I can't imagine. I cannot imagine.
The nice thing is, I interviewed the attorney after the case had settled, and she told me that Winona got $300,000 in the settlement. Plus, she got a house. And I said, I'm really surprised that you're telling me that, because I would have thought there would have been a gag order. And she said, I thought so too, but apparently it's a not-for-profit, and not-for-profits cannot have a gag order when they settle for wrongdoing. I've never found the law there. I've never been able to find that, but I would love to find that.
You know, and I think the way it works, You know, because I don't think there's any broad prohibition against a gag order, at least not in Arizona, and that's, which is where I'll limit my converse, my topic too. But where generally what the issue you have is because it's an association, all the members have the right to know how the money's being spent.
Right.
So if the money's coming from the association,
right,
then it makes it impossible to have any sort of a prohibition like that.
But they do that. They do that all the time.
They do.
They'll go to settlement. There are no open court records. There's nothing, you know, and they'll say, if you leak this, then all bets are off. So the homeowner says, okay, and they take the money and they keep quiet. The board leaks it later on and they say, well, it must have come from you. And so they go after them again. It's that lactating bovine you were talking about.
Exactly. It's one of those recurring things that just continues to happen and happen and happen. It really is sad.
I want to go back to your client that we were talking about, and you said that they were prohibited from using any of the amenities, and that the sanction was 10 days for every day she didn't do something she was supposed to do. She told me that they canceled her card or shut down her card, so she was not able to go in and use the front door, use the elevators, you know, have access. They put all kinds of impediments in her way because they were still continuing to punish her.
And yeah, I mean, and you know, and that's what happens when you get a vindictive board. There's really no stopping them.
Are they should they be allowed to do that, or should there be some prohibition? I hate to use laws because they have no teeth, and unless you go to court, you know, the government's not going to enforce them. But should they be allowed to do that? I mean, it's inhuman.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think they absolutely should not be allowed to do it under any scenario, but certainly not to appease the ego of a board member. You know, you certainly shouldn't have your rights cut off because a homeowner accused a board member of having a secret meeting or not having an open meeting. I mean, that's the sort of stuff that's foolish that you wouldn't think would be. You wouldn't. That's just insane. So, you know, should they be allowed to you know, exercise their own personal vendetta against someone? Never. And should they be allowed to use deed restrictions for that? No. I mean, a lot of the problems is, you know, some of these deed restrictions are, well, you shouldn't have a nuisance on the property. Well, okay, that makes perfect sense, but you know, then there's a board member deciding, well, I get to decide what a nuisance is.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that her assessments are extremely high. They're well over $1,000 a month. So
yes.
Not allowed to use any of the amenities that she's paying for. Not allowed to use the front entrance, not allowed to access her unit in peace. I mean, all of these are petty, and in my opinion, they should not be allowed to happen. And it ended up costing the association a lot of money for legal fees. Congratulations on winning the case. And
well, thank you.
And I understand that. And I understand in Arizona, is it routine that the prevailing party gets legal fees, or is that just something?
If a case arises out of a contract, yes.
Out of a contract, so okay. So you did get that, which means that the homeowners had to pay for it. How aware were the homeowners in this case, or the other unit owners, in terms of what was going on? Were they aware of it?
Well, I think they were all aware of it because the board, in addition to doing what we've described, also published a series of very unflattering statements about the individual. So, and would publish them to everyone. Hey, everyone, guess who we're going to fine again? We're going to start imposing fines against this individual because we don't like what she's saying. So everyone was aware of it, of this particular board. The bigger, are they aware how the case was resolved? Now, I don't know if they are to this day. I don't know. I've never seen a statement of the association members saying we settled that lawsuit. So those who know about it only know what they've been told.
Are the homeowners allowed to use whatever means that the board uses to disseminate information as well, or is that one-sided?
You know, it depends on the association. I've represented people who all they've asked for is a simple email list. They're running for the board. They want to be able to email everyone their position, and the board says no. Then the board sends out an email blast to these same individuals. So it varies from association to association.
Okay, but there's nothing in the statute providing that information. There's a statute in Virginia that says that the homeowners should be able to communicate with the rest of the unit owners, homeowners, in their association using the same means that the board uses. So if it's a newsletter, they should be able to write letters and have it published in the newsletter. If it's a website, whatever it is. Not sure how well that's working out, but...
Right. Well, and I mean, again, then you get into situations where, you know, it's even where it's supposedly clear. I mean, look, Arizona has what I consider to be a very clear statute that says a homeowner is allowed to look at all financial and other records. And they carve out limited exceptions for attorney-client privilege or personal health information of someone. But all means all. And I am constantly having to go to court because they refuse to give up the ledger or the profit and loss statement or the balance sheet or the voting ballots. People want to know how many votes did I lose by, and constantly have to go back to they're constantly going back to ask these questions again and again, and they're saying no and forcing people to go to court.
In my association, the declaration says that every homeowner has a right to look at the books and records of the corporation. No limits. But my association's really old. It's one of the first ones before the CAI School of Law decided that they were going to tinker around with people's rights. The statute, however, does have exceptions. Yeah, you can see the books and the financial books and records, but you know you can't see this and you can't see that and you can't see the other. And we're going to do this, that, and the other. And so I think sometimes it's worth going and checking your governing documents to see what they have to say, because you're an attorney. Unless I'm wrong, they prevail, right?
Yeah, I mean that's. Probably an accurate statement, I think. I mean, there's, you know, first of all, you should always be knowledgeable. A lot of people I meet with didn't realize they're moving into a homeowners association, or they have a profound misunderstanding of what that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people, they make assumptions that, okay, well, I have these things called assessments, but I'm sure that I paid up through my mortgage, so I'm not going to bother investigating.
Yeah. No, I know. There's so much. That's why I do the show. But anyway, Jonathan, thank you so much. It's been so much
fun.
Thank you. I've
Been looking forward to this. It's been so much fun talking to you.
Well, I have too. I appreciate it. I'm happy to come on again if you have other questions that come up.
I would love to have you come back on. I would love it. Now I've got your cell phone number. You're in trouble.
Now you do. Okay, Shu. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.